After rising the next morning, Maharaj Yudhishthira performed his religious duties, which consisted of daily prayers, offering sacrifice to the sun god, and distributing charity to the brahmanas. Footnote 31. The cutting words of Srila Prabhupada's purport to 131 make crystal clear to the modern reader the vital significance of King Yudhishthira's rigid execution of morning duties under Vedic injunction. One who is not prepared to practice injunctions prescribed in the Shastras cannot be a good man simply by book knowledge. Modern householders are practiced to different modes of life, namely to rise late and then take bed tea without any sort of cleanliness, without any purificatory practices, as mentioned above. The household children are taken to practice what the parents practice, and therefore the whole generation glides towards hell. Nothing good can be expected from them unless they associate with sadhus. Like Dhritarashtra, the materialistic person may take lessons from a sadhu like Vidura and thus be cleansed of the effects of modern life. Because remember, modern means not Vedic, because it's always been there. It's not that these things are a brand new thing. And they've always been there. It's just part of the Western kind of scene. Right? The farther south you go, then the more tendency that they take baths. Romans were into baths. But generally, this more kind of like the day or the evening, or like in the east that you have also, like the Japanese and others, they take baths. But it's generally also in the evening, like that. They may also have the morning bath, especially if you're out in the villages and that. But otherwise, the Western thing is generally they don't take baths. It's so cold and all that, they always wear their stuff, so you just don't want to take off the clothes to take a bath, you know, because it's just they don't, you know, bother with. Somehow or another, they don't bother with heating. I'm not sure, but
what?
Yes.
Sometimes we come across that people acknowledge that we should refer back to the Vedas, but then, oh, this is Kali Yuga, so we have to figure out how to do that, and then it becomes flipped upside down.
But what's that? See, that's the key.
Yeah.
Is what we have to do that, but what's the that?
Yeah.
You know, the principle is cleanliness.
Yeah.
Then how to apply that in the situation, yes. You know, it's called floor heating. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Temples build their own place. They can put in floor heating. Then sitting on the floor is not a problem. But they won't. And then they'll say, oh, sitting on the floor is impractical.
Yes.
But the point is they build their own bathrooms, but don't make facility to wash the feet, and then say it's not practical. You understand?
Yes.
We build our own kitchens. And, you know, the whole point is here it says, one who is not prepared to practice injunctions. So in this case, it's not prepared to practice. See, being practical is okay if you're prepared to practice. You know what I'm saying? Someone who's, let's say, very expert at something, they can do it at all times. You know, say like somebody's very expert at riding a horse. They can ride on the flatlands, they can ride through water, they can ride through mountains, they can do all kinds of things. But the regular just kind of, you know, how you say, recreational rider, then, you know, generally likes to stay to the more flat areas or, you know, open areas, you know, no trees. No trees is good. Right? No trees is good, right? So then So the principle here is Prabhupada's point, one who is not prepared to practice injunctions cannot be a good man simply by book knowledge.
Yes.
You know, because that's the thing is, why does modern man, you know, it means, because not all modern men think they're good. You know, most modern, you could say a lot of modern men, your common modern man may try to be good. There's a lot of modern men, they don't worry about it. They just go on with life. Then there's those who try to be good. But then there's a class that think they are good. Yes. What is that class? It's one particular class.
Vaishyas?
No. The ones that simply have book knowledge.
Yeah, okay.
In other words, if they have a college education, not a postgraduate, or not, you know, they've just graduated. And specifically if it's in the arts. If it's in science, they have a different headspace. But if it's in arts, then they always think that they're good men, simply because of that. Because they've studied, they've talked about being good and what is good, though they have no idea. You know, there's a sense, because the soul, we always have to remember, is that within anybody, you're going to find some elements that are actually connected to the truth, because the soul is common, right? Everybody is the same nature of soul, right? There's not different natures of soul. There's only one nature of soul. There's different natures of conditioning, right? So therefore, you'll see some actual reality at some part. You know, somebody that they're more, you know, clear or honest in one area, but not in another. Someone else in a different area. Someone else here. So you're always going to find. It's not. That's why Yudhishthira's point is you can't find anybody who's totally bad, because the soul still shines through to some degree at some point, right? But this idea that simply because they have a modern education, what's considered good. Right? Like before, if you were a respectable person of the society, means on the top of society, you had to have done your postgraduate. If you didn't do a postgraduate, then you were educated as a general person, you know, a general educated person, but you weren't a leader in society because you didn't get your postgraduate education. You know, not at least in the, you know, the intellectual kind of area. But nowadays, if you do a graduation, then you're considered educated, and then you have the right to make comments and, well, it's Kali Yuga and all this kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? Because someone who doesn't think he's good because he's educated would approach it differently. It's just not practical. I can't work it in, or it's too difficult. I can't relate to it. They'll be a touch more honest. The simply educated person, you know. You're a simply book-educated person. They'll always try to cover their fault by something else. That somehow or another, the modern education develops this attitude, this ego, that they're somehow or another superior. You know, because if they don't, who's willing to pay $30,000 a year? Right? You know, that's a lot of money. You know, you can invest and start a serious business with that money and make, you know, a lot more than, you know what I'm saying? So the whole point is that this is the thing he's saying. One who's not prepared to practice injunctions prepared cannot be a good man simply by book knowledge. Because we think, no, I'm educated, therefore I'm good. That's the premise. So all your journalists, all you guys that are writing editorials, all the people speaking on talk shows, all this and that, generally they're all in this class. The guys that you hear are in this class because they're educated enough you hear about them. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So they do this. So that's the whole point, is it's not enough. It's not enough. You actually have to be willing to practice the injunctions. But like you said, we may not be so expert at them. There may be some situation that's very difficult. Like we said, you're driving your car, you know, from one place to another on the road for so many hours, and you stop in one of the, to pick up petrol, you go to the bathroom, you know, you're wearing your clothes and shoes, and you don't take off your shoes and wash your feet and do all that kind of stuff. But when you get to your destination, you take off your shoes and then wash your hands, mouth, and feet. You know, so you can wash your hands and mouth there, but you can't do your feet. But when you get there, it's not that, oh, well, it's not practical. I don't wash my feet when I'm at the petrol station. Yeah, but you're not at the petrol station. You're at home, or you're at the temple. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So That's the kind of things that, because he says one who is not prepared, but then they'll cover it by their so-called book knowledge. Oh, it's Kali Yuga. But the point is the injunctions we're given are for Kali Yuga. You know what I'm saying? So why don't we have fun here? You know, it's just like, you know, the kids are playing soccer or something like that, you know, and somebody does something they shouldn't. And then you call, hey, you can't do that. No, but it's Kali Yuga, you know. He says, you know, we know that that's the rules, but, you know, we have to find a way, you know. What would he say? Oh, that's stupid. You know, like that. You know, it's like, you know, you put your you know, microwave dinner in the oven for 1 minute instead of 2 minutes. And like, you give it to the person that's not really hot and not really cooked. Right, and they say, "Hey, what's going on here? This is not cooked." Oh, it's Kali Yuga, you know. So, you know what I'm saying? You can do that in anything. You know, so you just go out. You know, so everybody else is going out, and they're wearing, you know, a little bit nicer clothes, and you come in your, you know, t-shirt and shorts, you know, like that. You know, and not only of shorts, how you say, track shorts, yeah. You know, that's real bad, right? You know, so, like that. And then everybody's, why are you dressed like, oh, it's Kali Yuga, you know, we can't, you know, all these rules. You know, what are they going to say? No, in other words, what rules they are willing to follow, that they're prepared to follow, they're very strict about. You know, and we're talking about the liberals here.
Yeah.
But the ones that they're not prepared, then they use all this, that simply, but they'll all come up with all these kind of other things. Otherwise, other people don't have such discussions. They don't try to cover their lack of being prepared by so-called knowledge. That's the difference. Your common person will just say, hey, I can't relate, I can't do, it's too much problem, or I don't understand it. They'll be more open, a little bit more open. But these persons, I don't know, they just have this, they're just so closed by the academy makes you so proud.
Yes.
You know, and now it used to be, you know, undergraduate was a 4-year degree. Now it's generally they're 3-year degrees. You know, give it some time, it'd be 2 years.
Right? It's practical.
No, previously we used to call that, you know, community college.
Yeah.
You know, now they call it university, but before these same courses were community college. They were considered they were just practical stuff, they were a lower level.
In Denmark, they just changed the way they grade papers so it's easier to get higher grades.
Yes.
That's
yeah.
also
yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody failed, yeah. So the one who failed the least, he got the A. Yeah, and so therefore then the children don't do. If the parents are following nicely, the children will follow nicely. You know, that's the idea. Otherwise, then, like it says, the whole society, the whole generation glides towards hell.
Yes.
Okay. Nice. Just thinking, yeah. Hey, I'm gliding here. You know, yeah. No, but Prabhu, hey, I'm gliding here. You know, so, yeah. You know, like that. Yeah. When Yudhishthira entered the palace to offer respects to his superiors, he discovered his old aunt and uncles were missing. Because he'll do his morning sadhana, then he'll come and respect the elders, go to the temple, see the sadhus, you know, that's what Manu mentions, that's the, you know, proper culture and etiquette, you know, and despite that some may say, oh, but some people refer to Manu, it's like, yes, we do refer to Manu. You know, Prabhupada said we should, right? You know. Suddenly overcome by anxiety, the king turned to Sanjay and demanded, where is our old blind uncle? Where is my well-wisher Vidura and my mother Gandhari? Although they were both highly mortified by the death of their sons, I have no doubt been most ungrateful. Having taken my offenses seriously, did they drown themselves in the Ganga? 32-33. In his purport to 113-33, Srila Prabhupada makes the most moving observation of the saintliness of Maharaj Yudhishthira. And that one was 31, okay. When, therefore, he, Yudhishthira, could not find his uncle and aunt in the palace, naturally his doubts arose, and he conjectured that they had gone down to the water of the Ganga. He thought himself ungrateful because when the Pandavas were fatherless, Maharaj Dhritarashtra had given them all royal facilities to live, and in return he had killed all Dhritarashtra's sons in the battle of Kurukshetra. As a pious man, Maharaj Yudhishthira took into account all his unavoidable misdeeds. Like unavoidable, because they could be seen as misdeeds by oneself, but it was according to his duties, because he'll never do something that's not his duty. But still, in performance of your duty, okay, it's your duty, but then why is a grihastha's duty his duty?
Because he's a grihastha.
Because he's a grihastha. But why is he a grihastha?
Because he wants to be.
That's the thing. So Yudhishthira's looking at it from that angle. In other words, whatever he's doing properly. And so it's not sinful. But he's looking at it, I'm in this position because of my own needs. Therefore, even though I'm doing my duties for my own needs, still it's causing anxiety for others.
Yeah.
Right? Yes.
In society nowadays, if you try to work according to Manu, everybody else doesn't, so you still be blamed.
Yes, but at least you're going to get blamed anyway, but you might as well get blamed for doing something that's right. You know what I'm saying?
Feel better.
Sorry, at least you know, you knew you were doing right.
Yeah.
But the point is also remember that Manu, in the second, in the, what is the 10th, no, 11th chapter, no, 10th chapter, then is talking about what do you do if the regular duty is not available. So in other words, the principle of it must always be maintained, because he'll give there your many of your natural situations that will come up and how you deal with them. But remember in the 12th chapter, then he's mentioning about what do you do if it's not there, if it's not explained there, the situation. So generally, if it's a need for, you know, the law, it's contemplation by qualified people, then they come up with a solution. But the principle is based on the training of what one should do, one then applies what's the principle into the situation in your life. So adjustment may need to be made. Adjustment is the Vedic principles. We see it's when it starts in the beginning. So these are the last instructions, right? But the first instructions, when it starts talking, is that you have to be able to apply it to yourself, right? It has to be based on Shruti and Smriti. Right? And because Shruti is the superior, then you say Shruti and Smriti. So Smriti is the tradition of how great personalities practiced it. So as we see, how Prahlad Maharaj, how Narad Muni, how others practice it. Now these are great personalities who are following Shruti. Then in doing that, their lifestyle is what we can take advantage from. Then the third is then from the, you know, our acharyas and the great, you know, senior personalities that are, you could say, contemporary to us, because it's not a whole lot of people are there right at the time of Brahma and the Prajapatis and all that. You know, they're there, but then they're the ones that the scriptures, the smritis about. You know, so for us, because there's that little bit of time lag there, then you have that third element of your how you say. You're a acharya. Anyway, even if there's not, there's still you have gurus. So your guru and who you would consider. So it may be the same people. You know what I'm saying? It's just like a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, he follows the founder acharya and his spiritual master, but they happen to be the same person. But the next generation, they have their spiritual master, the founder acharya. Does that make sense? So you always have. So then, what would be considered our contemporaries? So that means basically from Lord Chaitanya, this side, right? You know, under our founder. Then, having taken all three of those into consideration, then you apply it into your life. And then you make it until it works, right? So being comfortable means that you're comfortable with doing your best at following the injunction. Right? You're not uncomfortable about it. That's comfortable. This idea that comfortable means, you know, it's like according to how I like. No, it has to be, I'm not uncomfortable with it. Because if we're dealing with the mode of passion, then it's always a bit not that ideal mode of goodness, it's always not ideal in the beginning. Right? It's bitter in the beginning, sweet at the end. Mode of passion is sweet in the beginning, bitter at the end. So most take being comfortable from the viewpoint of the mode of passion. And then when it all falls apart, then what's the problem? It's the injunctions, because I've been trying to make my life molded around these injunctions, but my approach to the last principle is wrong. Or the others. I'm not really prepared. And so therefore, I'm looking at it from passion. I'm making myself comfortable. But then, if it's not sustainable, then that means you're dealing with passion. Right? If it's sustainable, you're dealing with goodness. Right? Because goodness is the rule. It has its thing. It always applies. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the difficulty here.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So it always has to be applied. But the point is learn how to express it, how to practice it that it works in the environment, and how to practice it so that you can, and how to contemplate it so you know how to explain it. So at least you get it to the point where, okay, they understand it, though maybe they wouldn't do it themselves. And that's good. Yeah. It's rare you find people that are actually have the same viewpoint. If you really think about it, people that have, they're close, that they feel close, they can really talk to, you may have one, two, three people like that. And we're talking about hundreds of thousands of devotees. Like that. So this idea that everyone's saying, there's no such thing as everyone's saying. In fact, we don't care what everyone said. We care what the Acharya said. The whole point is, that's the whole thing. I think Chanakya makes that point. You're going to have millions of fools say a lie is the truth, but if one, qualified person says what's true, that's more valuable. So this whole thing, it's about the mass. Where does this come from? What's philosophy is based on the mass? Right? Yeah, like that. It goes back, it's all the Greek stuff. It's not Vedic stuff. So you could say, yes, it's a little bit more classic than, McDonald's or something, but it's not really up to the standard of spiritual life, because we see as of the one, you could say of all the Greek philosophers, the one that got the closest to Vedanta and understanding was Socrates, and they killed him. So actually, the whole basis of the Greek, they don't really like, so this is a 3,000-year-old problem in the Western history. They just don't like this idea of that the material world's an illusion, there's an absolute truth beyond that, because that was his philosophy. Right? This world's not actually real. And then there's the actual real world, which is based on the absolute. So we have to adjust our life to the absolute. They say, no, we make the absolute. So that's the whole thing. Everybody wants, therefore it's vox populi. It's Greek philosophy. It's not our philosophy. And it's not even high-grade Greek philosophy. Like, do we know any names of those sophists? Are there names? No, that's the point. There's no names. But they were professionals. They were the judges, lawyers, aristocracy. They were the sophists. So that's the difficulty. It's we go on these things and other people agree, but what's the point of their agreeing if it's wrong? Right? So that's the point, is we have to learn the absolute truth. So all that kind of stuff, Bhagavatam says, it kicks this out. It's only going to deal with pure devotional service. Right? Gita will tell you how to engage those and connect them to the Lord. But Bhagavatam's not even going to bother. Right? Does that make sense? And we see in Rupa Goswami, even less. Yes. I'm just writing this book for my friends. Yeah. That's it, Yeah, and then where's it? He's even more far out. Satyabhama in Chaitanya Lila. Jagadananda. He says, Srup Damodar was asking, what are you writing the book for? What's the purpose of this, that? And he turned to him and said, I'm writing this to please myself. I just want to think about Lord Chaitanya, and I just want to write down what I remember about him. So, if I'm happy with it, it's good. So it's even a more narrow audience. So he's not even bothered with anything. So there's just no discussion. Even Rupa Goswami is not going to get into logic, but he's going to base it on Pramad. Yeah. Here, he's not even going to do that. He's just going to put down his remembrance of Lord Chaitanya's feelings and this and that, and that's it. So you see, is that it's like the modern, but it's totally connected to the Lord. Yes. So it's glorious. Yes. Well, the modern wants to do that, then it gets a little weird. You can't read it, right?
Who was that that wrote for himself?
Jagadananda. Yeah. And then you have the, what was the thing? I can't even remember his name. We always remember James Joyce. Yeah. So he'd be like the antithesis of this on the material platform. As a pious man, Yudhishthira took into account all his unavoidable misdeeds, and he never thought of the misdeeds of his uncle and company. Right? You know, it's everybody makes a mistake. That's all he's looking at. Dhritarashtra, it's not that he didn't know that they were there, because he says, you always protected. He tells Vidura, you protected us like a bird, you know, the wing of a bird through poison and arson. So it's not that he doesn't know and he doesn't know who did it, but he doesn't consider it that it affects the relationship. Right? It's a formal relationship. It remains formal. Right? Like that. May affect an intimate relationship. Dhritarashtra had suffered the effects of his own misdeeds by the will of the Lord. But Maharaj Yudhishthira was thinking only of his own unavoidable misdeeds. Because right? Dhritarashtra didn't behave nicely. If he had from the beginning established Yudhishthira on the throne, then Dhritarashtra, his brothers, everything would have been set up nicely. Yudhishthira would have taken care of them. They were all, they all would have had places. Everything would have run, and it would have been a very powerful kingdom. Like that, you know. But he didn't, and so now he got the effects of his misdeeds. He ends up with nobody. You know, basically, except for Sanjay and his wife, and Vidura, and Yudhishthira, and that's it, there's nobody left. You know, and Vidura, Gandhari, how you say, and Yudhishthira all opposed his plans. So anybody who supported his plans, every last one of them is dead. Yes. Like that. Okay. That is the... Okay. Dhritarashtra had suffered the effects of his own misdeeds by the will of the Lord, but Maharaj Yudhishthira was thinking only of his own unavoidable misdeeds. That is the nature of a good man and devotee of the Lord. A devotee never finds fault with others, but tries to find his own and thus rectify them as far as possible. Because actually, we can only take it so far, because it's the Lord's external potency. It's by the Lord's grace that it will be fully eradicated. Is that so? But in other words, we look at this side. Not that one becomes weak by it, right? Because we see when Yudhishthira became weak by this contemplation, then, you know, Krishna said it wasn't good. Bhishma said it wasn't good. Right? So you have, it's a matter of being realistic, but still being strong and performing one's duties. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the difficulty. In the modern, it's either you contemplate them and see your faults and then you become weak, or you just don't even bother noticing them and then you're strong. They can't get this balance. Okay. Sutta Goswami points out to the sages that the grief and mental agitation caused by the disappearance of his master at first hindered Sanjaya's reply. By means of intelligence, Sanjaya managed to pacify his disturbed mind, and wiping tears from his eyes, he at last told Yudhishthira, "I do not know anything about your two uncles in Gandhari, for I have been cheated by those great souls." Says here, Sutta Goswami points out, that means someone else is speaking. Who's, is Vyasa speaking here?
No,
it's this man. Huh? Sutta Goswami. Well, it says Sutta Goswami points out to the sages that the grief and mental agitation.
That's because actually these are not the verses. They are
told by Purana Prabhupada. Oh. 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 Okay.
What is it? What he
says? He says that these are Purna Pragyas. Like what? Because they're summaries or just rewordings? Because it just makes it shorter?
Yeah, he goes from the topic sometimes also.
Oh, okay. 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 Verses 38 to 51. Sri Nard Muni's arrival and his instructions to Maharaj Yudhishthira. Verses 38 to 50 describe how Narada Muni appears and Yudhishthira questions the sage. Narada instructs Yudhishthira about the true situation of the living entity in this world and advises him to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who has descended upon the earth. As Sanjaya uttered these piteous words, Narada Muni suddenly appeared. The Pandavas hastily got up from his seat to welcome the transcendentalist and offer him their obeisances. Yudhishthira mournfully said, "My dear Narada, I do not know where my two uncles and aunt have gone. You are like a captain of a ship in a great ocean, and you can direct us to our destination." Thus addressed, the godly personality, Devarshi Narada, greatest of the philosopher devotees, began to speak. 35-40. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to 113-40, there are different types of philosophers, and the greatest of all of them are those who have seen the personality of Godhead and have surrendered themselves to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Although among all such pure devotees of the Lord, Devarshi Narada is the chief, and therefore he has been described herein as the greatest of all philosopher devotees. Unless one has become a sufficiently learned philosopher by hearing the Vedanta philosophy from a bona fide spiritual master, one cannot be a learned philosopher devotee. One must be very faithful, learned, and renounced, otherwise one cannot be a pure devotee. Pure devotee of the Lord can give us direction towards the other end of nescience. Devarshi Narada used to visit the palace of Maharaj Yudhishthira because the Pandavas were all pure devotees of the Lord, and the Devarshi was always ready to give them good counsel whenever needed. Because they have the qualifications, so they'll take advantage of it. As we see Duryodhana, they'll come and give nice direction, but he won't take it. It doesn't go back to, the point is either that they're Kshatriyas, that they can't take it, or that because they are, they can, because we see as Duryodhana was qualified in his own right as Kshatriya, but he couldn't. Right? But we see Prachina Barhishat and these others, even though they're so materialistic, like that, so absorbed in Karmakanda, they can take it. So, in other words, it's the character that is the most outstanding thing. Of course, you have to give examples and everything according to the Kshatriya nature. They're going to want to hear about how. Means, in other words, if you want them as a king to be a Rajarshi, you have to give them examples of other kings. Like that. You know, Brahmins, kings, like that. Does that make sense? You know, unless there's some specific point you're making about. You can make a point and use, you know, the carpenter, or this one, or that one. But when it comes to applying it in their life, it should be someone in their line. It always helps. Yes.
Varna and character are independent of each other?
Yes and no. Means they will have an effect on each other. In other words, the ashram is the character. But now, depending on who is Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, that can, at least in the beginning, have an effect. But what you see technically from Yudhishthira, it doesn't have an effect, so much so that Karna considered him a Brahman. So he wouldn't fight with him. Right? He was just too saintly. You know. While Arjuna, though he, you know, does everything right, or Bhishma does everything right. Well, Bhishma, you have that emotional element, so then, you know, that can be really related to. But, you know, Arjuna, now that prowess and his skill is such. So, yes, so it'll have that effect. The other way is, depending upon how developed is the ashram, that'll have effect on the varna. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the two do have an effect, and they're more interrelated, you can say, for the Brahmins and Kshatriyas. There's a stronger connection there. Vaishyas and Shudras, they can be quite separate. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Where does the hat theories come in? Is it used in governance, or is it used in corporative management?
The hat theories.
You don't know De Bono?
No.
Nobody knows De Bono. Nobody's ever heard of the hat. Have you ever heard a devotee say, well, I'm wearing my, you know, management hat, you know? And then, because you're asking,
yes.
Why do you behave like that,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
We've been friends for years, you talk about, oh, I was wearing my management hat, of course,
yeah.
You know, of course. I have my rights, I can do anything I want if I change the hat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But who does that?
Yeah,
Shudras, Vaishyas. Because their point is it's just practical. One is I was only, and the other is, well, I was just expressing, it's just actually how I felt. You know, you sit in a circle, and then sit there and criticize each other, and tell everyone how you hate them, you've always hated them and everything.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, everyone goes, oh, wasn't that great, and hugging each other, and fabulous. where does this come from? You know, so it's just, you know, so it works in these different things. So you can have this kind of difference. You know, so that's the whole point, is you get this more of a difference. You get, you know, it's like the Shudra, he can be very devotional, very religious on one side, but at the same time he gets so caught up in his emotions on the other side. Vaishyas would be more controlled, because if you're not controlled, you can't deal with money, you lose it. That's why, you know, Shudras generally don't have money. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? You read about, like, say, the artists. You know, and they, you know, one movie, they may get $10 million, $15, $20 million they'll make. But then when you check what's their assets,
they're bankrupt.
Very few of them have a lot of money. A few of them are smart, and they have, you know, 150, 200 million because they got the money. They didn't just go out and have a party. You know? They did something with it. But it's rare. You know? In other words, if you hear about, you know, Hollywood actor, you know, that drunk, he's smoking, they got, you know, liver cancer, they got, you know, lung this and that, and their marriage fell apart, they're on the, you know, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth marriage, you know, then, you know what I'm saying? Everyone just goes, yeah, so, it says, you know, what do you want? You know, what do you expect? You know, it's like, that's the thing. But if that was in a Vaishya, you kind of think that's not very good. If it's in an administrator, you'd say this is really not good.
Yeah.
It's bad. It just shouldn't happen. There'll be room for office or stuff,
yeah.
Right? And the intellectuals, it's just you don't think it would ever happen, right? It does, but it's rare. But it's really just you can't relate to it. Politicians do. Yeah, okay, it happens, but it shouldn't happen. Vaishnav is kind of like it's just, but he doesn't lose his position as being businessman.
Mm, yeah.
You know, you know what I'm saying? It's just he's kind of not a nice person.
Yeah.
You understand? So that's the thing, is they're connected, but at the same time you have to be able to analyze them separately.
Yes.
You know, it's like everything. Yes. Like Buddha Yoga, you analyze all the parts separately, but you have to be able to see how they work together. So they do influence. Yeah? Okay.
It is said here that one must be very faithful, learn and renounce otherwise that cannot be a pure devotee.
Yes, because faithful means you have to be very faithful to the spiritual master. Learned means learned about Krishna. It doesn't mean that you have to be a scholar as such. It means that you have to know about Krishna to the extent of your ability.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So someone doesn't have any academic ability, but he knows Krishna is God. We're not the body, we're the soul, we're servant of Krishna. The process is devotional service through chanting the holy name. The goal is to please Krishna, develop pure love of God. Does that make sense? So one knows that, and however much more than that one can know, expand from that, that's learned. Because like remember there's that Brahmin who couldn't read, and he had the Gita upside down, and all the other Brahmins are laughing at him. But then Lord Chaitanya said, what are you doing? He says, well, my spiritual master said I should study, so I'm trying to study, you know. And he said, you know, and then I think he was crying. He said, but why are you crying? Because he was thinking about the same point that Bhishma was thinking about, how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is coming as the charioteer, right? So those elements like that, that's then what, then Lord Chaitanya said, you're the most learned. And he didn't know how to read. So we have to understand what learned means. It's not like what before, what was over here, simply by book knowledge. Like that. Now, if you have that and you have more scholastic knowledge, it means then you can explain it nicely and all that. So it's just, it adds to that service, if that's your service. But learned means that. Renounced means the result's not for you, it's for Krishna. So in other words, If the result's for you and you're going to give it to Krishna, sakam.
Yes.
So then that's not pure devotion. If it's already renounced before you even start the activity, it's for Krishna, then that's a pure devotee.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes. So that's because for us, this is just the common culture and character. So that's why it's a problem. We go against these things. Oh, you know, don't be so fanatic. You know, people are attached. You know, live with it and stuff like that. That's okay, as far as it's understood. The principle, though, is renunciation, and people work with that according to their level of practice and realization. Then that's fine, like that. We have no problem with that because in the Vedic culture, practically most everybody is grihastha, like that. You know, that's generally the way it goes. And the only ones that generally aren't, it's only coming from the Brahmin community. Generally, it's Brahmin brahmacharis might remain brahmacharis and not get married. Generally, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras will always get married. It'll be more rare that you find that they don't. Though it's not uncommon. I've heard of many Indian families where they have one, you know, brother or uncle or that who's not married. you know, like that. And it's not because he can't find anyone, because Indians are really good at finding you. You're just sitting there and just happen to be sitting next to them, they've already worked something out for you, you know, like that. So that would be good. It's that they just don't see the importance of getting married. You know, they have it, you know, that dutifulness and that thing of the family and that touch, just a touch of attachment, they remain. But they don't get married and they don't get involved in crazy. They're not crazy either, not like, you know, playboys or something. You know, they're just, you know, very, generally more sober, kind of a little bit, tend to be a little more religious than that. So it's not an uncommon thing. And we're talking here, you know, can be outside, this is outside the Brahminical, like that.
Yes.
So it can be, but it's more rare. The more common is unmarried will generally be within the Brahminical community, but it can be, you know, like that. Is that what he said? So these three, everybody. So if you don't catch that or learn it, oh no, you know, reading, that's all, you know, Maya, that's just jnana. Then the whole point is, how do you know anything? Then how do you know what's right and what's wrong? Then one gets so easily bewildered, right? And then. Then if you're not faithful, then it's just a matter, oh, we can discuss anything, we're just being open, we're just being, you know, trying to use our intelligence and understand that. No, that's not. Faithful means what is said is correct. Now I try to contemplate how it's correct. How does it apply? Because I can't logically see how it applies. But it does. Right? In other words, does that make sense? You know, any of these points that are said, then what does that mean? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Being so addressed, Narada explained, "My dear king, there is no cause for lamentation, for everyone is under the control of the Supreme Lord. It is he alone who brings persons together and then disperses them, like a player who arranges and then rearranges his playthings. As a cow is controlled by a rope through its nose, so humanity is conditioned to obey the orders of the Lord by being trained to follow the Vedic injunctions." Right? In other words, on the material platform, we're conditioned to not doing whatever we want. So now we have to recondition ourselves to follow the Lord's. Right? Right? That, and then from there, step to pure devotion. Right? Does that make sense? So conditioning will remain. The prarabdha karma remains. So it might as well be conditioned to following the injunctions of the Lord rather than conditioned to not.
Yes.
And that happens by, you know, knowledge and practice.
And by association.
And by association, yes. Yeah. Does that make sense? So in other words, that's the importance of it. That's why we're very, very careful about opposing the Vedic injunctions. If it doesn't make sense, try to find the principle. It doesn't make sense because we're looking at the detail.
Yes.
Or maybe we understand the principle, but we're not applying it enough till we get it to work in the detail.
Yes.
But this whole idea is, if I don't understand it, it doesn't make sense. So that comes from this modern pride, the educated pride.
Sometimes we see we understand it, or devotees understand the principle, but because of Arogya Bhakti, they apply principles according to their condition.
No, that's there as long as they can see the connection to the principle.
And if it's only them who see the connection?
then it's a problem. Because then the point is they should be able to explain it. Right? You know, so unless they're so advanced. But then you're not talking Aropi Bhakti. Aropi Bhakti, you're talking Neophyte. So it should be understandable to others, the explanation. Now, whether anybody else, you know, appreciates it, that's another thing, but it should be, you can explain it. If you can't explain it, then there's a weakness in the whole thing. It's not actually very strong. Because you can say you're applying it, but you're applying what you want to apply of it. Not necessarily. And okay, even you're applying what you want to of it, is what you're applying, is it going to be in the line of progression that it will come to the standard eventually? So in other words, there should be a willingness to follow the standard if you can get there. But you have to get there, right? But this unwillingness to follow it, then that means, what is your actual goal? Right? You know, it's the goal shifts from that ultimate element to just the immediate.
and which is part of application, but if that's all it is, or it's the major, it's very weak. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you want to please Krishna, but you have these things, and so you use this for Krishna. Okay, nice. Does that make sense? So it gets purified. So then slowly it'll be progressive, but you have to be able to see what is the weakness and then see what's the connection. Then it's useful. But if you think there is no weakness, then there'll be something wrong there. In his purport to 1.13.41, Srila Prabhupada expertly reminds us of the worldwide urgency of the Yuga Dharma mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, headquartered at Sridhar Mayapur on the bank of the sacred Ganges. All living beings in the material world have taken up the risk of conditioned life by their own selection and are thus entrapped by the laws of material nature. Because conditioned life is entangling for the jiva, so it takes it away from its natural position. Therefore, it's dangerous. The only way to get out of the entanglement is to agree to obey the Supreme. So, because we're used to this conditioning, we readjust the conditioning in connection with the Lord. Right? Because actually, it's not about the conditioning, it's about pure devotional service. But because conditioning is important for us, therefore we improve the quality of that conditioning. Yes. I'm saying you can't change the conditioning. You can improve the quality of it. Like, just like cooking. You can cook in goodness, you can cook in passion, you can cook in ignorance.
Yes.
So you don't, let's say if someone's a cook, you don't change that they're a cook, you change the quality of it, that you bring it to goodness. Does that make sense? There's no such thing as changing your conditioned nature. It's not going to happen.
Even if we change the body?
If you change the body, then it can adjust.
Yeah.
But the point is the body is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, the mind has its capacity, the intelligence has its capacity. So if you're Krishna conscious, you can use it at its best.
Yes.
And by pure devotion, you can even go beyond it. But it's based on the spiritual platform, not the material.
So our nature is in the gross body, not the subtle?
It's in the subtle body. And it's manifest through the gross. So if you change the mentality, you can change that. But the point is you have what you have now. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you're not going to change from a man to a woman to a man just by your dress. You know, getting a butch haircut doesn't necessarily make you a man. You know? I'm saying, you know, leathers, butch haircut, you know, nice shiny Harley, he's still a girl.
Okay. I'll remember that.
You will remember that, or you do remember that, like that.
But
why I keep bringing? I mentioned this when we were in Berlin. We saw so many.
Because
I mentioned, you know, I was with Sahotamars. You're driving, and that there's a whole crew of them, right? You know, we'd see them regularly, but then a whole crew of them. And then we you know, said, "Wow, so it's a girl." And he says, "Yeah, but they're not exactly girls." Okay. The only way to get out of the entanglement is to agree to obey the Supreme. But instead of becoming free from the clutches of Maya or illusion, foolish human beings become bound up by different nomenclatures, being designated as Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, Hindus, Mohammedans, Indians, Europeans, Americans, Chinese, and many others, and thus carry out the orders of the Supreme Lord under the influence of respective scriptural or legislative injunctions. The statutory laws of the state are imperfect imitation replicas of religious codes. But in other words, why are religious codes there? Right?
To get people to
order.
Know God.
Yes, order and to know God. Right? So it creates the society works. So the Vedic is that it creates order, and that order is progressive towards self-realization. While the Western, it's in pursuance of the same thing, but it's only interested in order. not in God realization, especially in your enlightened, you know, how you say, governance, then it's not about anything religious or spiritual at all. Right? In other words, religion is tolerated as long as you don't talk about it. Right? What's that, the army used to have that?
Don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah. So like that, you know. It's like that. You know, nobody talks about it, it's cool.
Yeah.
Right? So the whole aspect is, how do you say? Let me go from there. Yeah, is that they're functioning under that, but they're imperfect. But you have to. Still, Krishna's made the law that you have to follow the government rules. You have to follow the rules of your identity. But the problem is we're using, you know, second rate, third rate, tenth rate identities.
Yes.
Right? Because he starts off with the better ones, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudras. Yeah. Then he gets into more secondary than that.
And many others.
It's getting even worse than that.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't even mention hippies. Right? But, you know, hippies, punks, goths, emos, you know, great. He just leave all those ones off, you know.
Nerds, geeks.
Yeah, nerds, geeks. Yes, and there's a third one of those guys. Nerds, geeks.
Surfies.
Yeah, surfies. Yeah, okay. Now those guys are interesting.
Yeah.
Now that's what you're calling about. You know, you have the Paramahamsas and the fools are happy.
Yeah.
The surfies are happy.
Prabhupada called them the sufferers.
Yeah, sufferers, yeah. Yeah, in winter they're out there in their wetsuits and like that, yeah.
Sadhana.
Geeks, nerds.
Yeah.
Dorks.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Dorks. Yes.
May have your. Those are mostly pious. You're impious. Selection also. Thugs, joyriders, shoplifters.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So and therefore, and many others. Yeah. That's funny.
So you run left, isn't it?
Huh? Yeah, yeah, now you can just keep going. Yeah. Okay, the statutory laws of the state are imperfect imitation replicas of religious codes. So, in other words, the point is everybody is following God's law. So, you're either following it in its natural form, according to the Vedas. Or even if you reject the Vedas or don't know about the Vedas, you'll still follow them anyway, but you'll be following according to your imperfect senses. So
yeah.
Its effect won't be as good. Okay. The secular state or the godless state allows the citizens to break the laws of God, but restricts them from disobeying the laws of the state. The result is that the people in general suffer more by breaking the laws of God than by obeying the imperfect laws made by man. So it's not that they balance. Right? This idea of church and state being separated is okay on one level. In other words, there should be a balance. In other words, the church doesn't actually control the state. Church guides the state. So the problem is when it controls. At the same time, is the state can't control the church either. Right? There's a natural mutual support of each other. Like that. So that's the balance that they've been unable to get.
Yes.
Right? In the Western.
Yes.
Like that. Generally, outside of the Western, they've never really had that much problem. The rest of the world, pre-Christianity, generally was able to balance these two better. You know, it's more standard. But somehow or another, in the Christian era, in anything, they always have this problem. So it seems to be specifically a Christian, a you know, anxiety, a weakness, as they can't.
They don't have varnashram.
They don't have varnashram, but they also don't really have enough philosophy, you know, like that. And these the others don't either. But somehow, I think basically what it was is that you're maintaining the cultures. Like let's say the Arabs when they switched from a pagan religion to Mohammedan. They maintained the culture. They just dropped out, you know, all the pagan wallahs, but everything else remained the same. You know? So I mean, the Jews also, is that the same kind of culture and everything like that. But, you know, it becomes monotheistic. The Christians had to drop their culture to become monotheistic.
Yes.
Because the thing is you all these things are interrelated, but they somehow or another didn't make the, you know, they were very enthusiastic, so they weren't able to somehow or another balance this. Paul did to some degree, you know, a little bit, but you know, but the problem was is he was from a cultured background, right? Both from the Judaic tradition, and he would have been, you know, your high society in the Roman culture, like that. Though he leaned more on that, but then when you bring in those from that pagan background that don't have the cultural leadership, then the problem is then where do you judge that? Because the Judaic would be much more in line with the Christian philosophy, because it's already monotheistic. All you're doing is, you know, basically adding the principle of guru there, you know, acharya. So then these others, then if they drop that, then what do they have? So it's specific there. So we see is that this, but then because of that, as we mentioned before, because the genes are coming from the leftovers, you know, from millions of years back, from the Kshatriyas, then there's this element that whatever they're doing must predominate in the world. Right? You know, instead, you know, when it's talked about the New World Order or that, do they use a different term nowadays? Or that's still kind of like running? Okay, but it's always Western. It's never, let's say, South American or, you know, Arab or Oriental, or definitely not Indian, right? You definitely just don't even go there, right? Does that make sense? It's always that. So that's just the nature of what you're dealing with. So you combine this sense of supremacy with a lack of understanding of how to balance culture and all these different things, and then you end up with this mess.
Yeah.
Right? It seems to kind of go down as the list goes, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, it's good.
Yeah.
Take one ashram and
below. And many others. Yeah. We guess there are many others. Okay. Every man is imperfect by constitution under conditions of material existence, and there is not the least possibility that even the most materially advanced man can enact perfect legislation. Right? On the other hand, there is no such imperfection in the laws of God. If leaders are educated in the laws of God, there is no necessity of a makeshift legislative council of aimless men. There is necessity of change in the makeshift laws of man, but there is no change in the man-made laws because they are made perfect by the all-perfect personality of Godhead. It's like Chanakya has been there for thousands of years, and there's no need to change it. You just understand the principle, see how it applies. But in any man-made thing, whenever they make whatever their original laws, there's always adjustments and adjustments and adjustments. You know, down to multiple levels within a, what do you call it, outline, you know, system like that. You take any one of the, like, American, you know, the points of the Constitution. Each one of them has so many, hundreds and hundreds of bylaws. So because the imperfect people put it together like that. And so it just keeps changing and changing and changing. So his point out is, God's laws, you don't have that problem, but you have to be educated in them. Interesting to note, in general, I mean, it's not in general, but a lot, you can say, that within at least the democratic system, in the more modern democratic system, or more contemporary democratic system, ones who do very well in the system and are generally respected and stable and move up very, very nicely, their education was as lawyers.
Yes.
Right? So then there's more of an understanding between law and that. So people don't make that connection. You know, we think, you know, varnashram, and we don't make the connection. These are laws of God, so the legislative, they naturally fit into there. We take varnashram as a social system. No, it has that, but within the social system, you have to have governance.
Yes.
You have to have governance, you have to have economics, you have to have the senses, you have to have the understanding of the soul, right? That's a complete, you know, community. There's necessity of change in the makeshift laws of man, but there's no change in the God-made laws because they are made perfect by the all-perfect personality of Godhead. The codes of religion, scriptural injunctions, are made by liberated representatives of God in consideration of different conditions of living and by carrying out the orders of the Lord. So they've already considered all that. So it's just we have to try to understand what they've already considered. It's not that they've just made laws because they're fanatic. They've made laws according to different conditions of living.
Yes.
It doesn't even say to the individual. It says to the different conditions of living. You know, like that. So they understand these lifestyles. The conditioned living beings gradually become free from the clutches of material existence. The factual position of the living being is, however, that he is the eternal servant of the Supreme Lord, right? As opposed to all those other upadis. In his liberated state, he renders service to the Lord in transcendental love and thus enjoys a life of full freedom, even sometimes on an equal level with the Lord or sometimes more than the Lord. But in the conditioned material world, every living being wants to be the Lord of other living beings, and thus, by the illusion of Maya, this mentality of lording it over becomes a cause of further extension of conditional life. Because right? Conditional life means I'm not connected to the Lord. So now if I am the Lord, that even furthers it. So, in the material world, the living being is still more conditioned until he surrenders unto the Lord by reviving his original state of eternal servitorship. That is the last instruction of the Bhagavad Gita and all other recognized scriptures of the world. Right, so that's the final instruction. Within that is then how to connect all those upadis to the Lord. So in other words, we have conditioning. In light of that conditioning, how to apply that in connection with the Lord. That's the point. We don't identify with it. It's what we use. You know, it's just like, let's say, you know, like we say, you go into the kitchen, okay, a bunch of devotees, and they think, okay, let's, you know, we're going to do this Sunday feast here. Okay, who's cooking what? You know, someone says, okay, I'll cook the puris, you know, hey, I'll make the halava, I'm making the sweet rice. You know, like this and that, you know, until you find out there's no
feast.
You know, say, yeah, just go on like that. Well, isn't that standard?
I'm like
this bakura is, right? This is supposed to be the sabji, right? Like that, and generally some rice, you know, like that, and a chutney, right? And a drink, okay? So, like this. So everybody takes different ones. But do they identify with it? I am the halava.
No, because there's an eternal relationship, so I can't be the whole.
Yeah, yeah. So the point is. So the thing is they're not. But the thing is, they do all the rules that apply to the halava, right? Apply to the halava, apply to cooking, apply to the feast, right? In other words, how much halava do you make?
A bucket.
A
bucket.
Let's say there's 300 Sankirtan brahmacharis.
300 buckets.
Yes, okay. So, in other words, it's all together. It's all in consideration. So, there's rules governing the whole thing. Right?
Yeah.
Or did he speak wrong?
I don't know.
No, yeah, okay. Oh, he was just appreciating.
Yeah.
Immediate response. He didn't have to go, like that. Okay. So
yeah. Relishing in the mind.
Yes. So each bucket is different than the other.
Yeah.
So then, of all the buckets, your bucket's the biggest. Right?
Goes without saying.
Yes. Okay. Does that make sense? Okay. So we catch. In other words, we're not the body, but we're following the rules that go according to the body because conditioning is there. Now the point is we recondition our conditioning to fit into the Lord's plan rather than allow our conditioning to just run at its own, you know, natural tribalness. Right? You know what I'm saying? Because actually in this list here is that after a few names, then it goes into tribals.
Yes. Well, isn't it already kind of?
No, it's when you go, it goes into, but the point is that means of tribals means outside of Varnashram.
Yes.
Like that. So that's the whole point. It's not that we ignore conditioning. It's you recondition the conditioning to be able to follow the legislation of the Lord.
Yes.
Otherwise, we're already conditioned to follow the modern.
Yes.
You know, which you have to do anyway because you're in that. But you still have to do the practice of conditioning to following the Lord's laws.
Yes.
Then that's the natural position to very nicely interact with the devotees.
Yes.
Right, that's the natural cultural position. We seem to be past 8 o'clock. Okay. And here's, and that's the last instruction of the Gita and all other recognized scriptures. So the recognized scriptures, they actually also mention these things.
Mm-hmm.
But just that people don't interpret them in that way. They don't understand the principle of pure devotion. But it still, if it's a recognized scripture, it does talk about these things. Narad Muni continues speaking to Yudhishthira. Feelings of separation are due to illusory affection and nothing else. Footnote 36. In his commentary to 1.13.44, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, there's a real affection as well. It has been just said that because everything is under the control of the Lord, one should not lament. But when looking at the world, there is no real object of suffering. People may consider themselves as jiva, dhruvam, or as the body, adhruvam, or neither as jiva or body by being brahman, ubhayam, or having qualities of both consciousness and unconsciousness, va. This would be the belief that the self is a conscious particle, but subject to destruction. All four types of people should not lament for their relatives, since they have no affection, sneha anyatra, being situated with discernment. Affection is the source of lamentation, is the root of ignorance. This affection is generated from illusion in the material world, mohajat. This indicates that the affection related to bhakti is not included here as a source of lamentation. Lamentation arising from bhakti, the Stai Bhava of Karuna Ras, is most excellent. Yes, so he's pointing out is the transcendental affection is one thing. Material affection, that's another thing. Because the material is based on the conditioning. And our connection with that. It means our body connected with others. It means our body is our conditioning, connected with others' conditioning. So that's always going to create problems. But when it's based on devotional service with the Lord and the devotees, then that actual is real affection.
Even though it's still body to body, but between devotees?
It's like we were discussing, I think it was yesterday and before that, about where the focus is. Is it about the medium is the message, or the message uses a medium? That's where it is. You know, in other words, when you're dealing with devotees, you are dealing with an element of reality. But if you're identifying that based on the bodily element, then it becomes, it has that mix. Does that make sense? It's like devotional service, it's mixed. So there is the spiritual element that you're getting, but there's also the material element you're getting. Does that make sense? Okay. So, you know, you take care of the body, so then you're getting benefit for, you know, serving devotees. But at the same time, if there's an identification with that, then that will also create some difficulty. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole idea, is that one tries to avoid that. You know, because here, Yudhishthira's lamentation, we see, is even, how do you say, is something that's not important, but we see the nature of him is that it's about his duties and about the actual, I say, understanding of if he's done appropriate action. It's not specifically about the bodily relation. Does that make sense? So that's it, it's in its better state. Yes. So we see, yes, we open with Yudhishthira Maharaj or Arjuna in their state of lamentation and, you know, total maya. But, you know, it's like if people of the world, you know, started at, yes, that total maya, the world would be a much better place as, yes, far as, you know, the mundane goes. But it's still not good enough. That's the whole thing. Even that won't satisfy the soul. Does that make sense? So you're going to have the mix. You'll get both things at once. You know, just like if in your service, you're doing it because you want to please Krishna, but at the same time you want people to recognize, then you'll both things will happen at once. So for the service to Krishna, that's always going to be nice, but the recognition, you may get it by Krishna's grace, but at the same time it will create a problem. You know what I'm saying? It's just how it works. It has to. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, you have a dog, it has to bark. Like that. You know, it's just the way it works. Does that make sense? Yeah. Thus, you should give up your anxiety, which is due to the ignorance of the eternal self. You are simply thinking, how will these poor, helpless creatures continue to exist without me? Right? Bharat Maharaj had the same problem. Right? One's gross material body is under the control of Kala, Karma, and the three gunas. Since the body is already in the jaws of the serpent, so to speak, how can it give protection to others? Right? In other words, you say, I'm protecting them. But the point is, your body is controlled by the modes of nature. So how can you say it's giving the... No. In other words, by the Lord's grace, your body might be used as a medium to take care of their body, but it's not actually under our control, it's under the control of the modes. The modes are actually running everything. So we're just thinking, I'm doing this. Yes. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, it appears that in Gita first and then Bhishma instructions and those, it's like coming, you know, same about modes and time, and it's gonna happen again and again. And those are like most important instructions, like, yes, basic instructions.
Yes, yes. Well, that's my point, because the repetition is important. But it's not just, we're not the body, but you notice the level that it's talking about how we're not the body. Where you're having it, it's not that just, okay, we're not the body, and that, but that you're looking at it on this Brahman platform. That the body is the Lord's external energy, and it is created and maintained and transforms and deteriorates according to the Lord's plan, according to the Lord's laws. And so we simply have mentalities that we can take up to try to be the Lord. In other words, there's 8,400,000 ways you can think you're God, you know, and think you're the enjoyer. And so then accordingly, then Krishna arranges all this. So the modes of nature are taking care of this. We're just sitting there as if on a chariot. You know, if you're riding around, you're not, it's just you want to go somewhere, it's taking you there. But it's not that you're in control. Someone else is driving the car, and they can tell you at any time to get out. You know, but we're thinking, I'm in control, so it's secure. But it's not, because the modes of nature, since the modes of nature are managing it, and managing the other bodies, and managing the situations, all these have to match. You know, you're going in the car nicely, you know, there's no traffic, and then suddenly you get turned one quarter, and there's a traffic jam, and you're stuck. You know? So the whole point is the modes of nature are doing this. So Yudhishthira is thinking, I'm protecting my, you know, uncles and aunts. But his point is this, your body's controlled by the modes, their body's controlled by the modes. You're not actually the shelter of anything. Right? So these elements are there that one can see in that way. So the point here is by seeing this way, it starts to break the attachment. Right? It doesn't mean we don't continue the relationships. It means it breaks the illusory concept within the relationship. Right? Just like someone has a relationship with someone else, and, you know, there's so many common points that they interact, but there's a few points where each one thinks the other one is annoying. So now breaking those is not a problem. Right? So then it's pointed out. You know, it's either pointed out pleasantly. You know, if they catch it there, then it's a little bit more, and then till it's, you know, just downright blunt.
Yes.
Until some point it's sign here. Like that. That's the most blunt.
Yes.
Did I do something wrong?
Was it something I said?
Yeah. Okay. One's gross body is under the control of kala, karma, and the three gunas, right? The three gunas are managing it now, but time makes it move, and karma is how the reactions will go. Since the body is already in the jaws of the serpent, so to speak, how can it give protection to others? The nature of material life is that it is a hard struggle for existence, wherein the weaker beings are devoured by the stronger ones. 44-47. Right? You know, it's the way it goes. Like, you know, it's like in the school, the cheerleaders devour everybody else. Right? So that's the stronger devours the weak. Right? At this point, Sri Narad Muni utters. No, okay. No, it's okay.
I think she's okay.
Okay, yeah. No, her head didn't blow off. No. So it must be okay.
Huh?
Yeah, okay. She's lost her place. Okay, at this point, Sri Narad Muni utters one of the more famous verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, which summarizes the cruel state of affairs among the living entities of this material world. Those who are devoid of hands are prey for those who have hands. Those devoid of legs are prey for the four-legged. The weak are the subsistence of the strong. And the general rule holds that one living being is food for another. Bhagavatam 1:13-47.
What's the progression?
It's
going to be devoured
by someone? No. It's not about that. It's about what he's talking about is Yudhishthira's. A manifestation of material attachment, and then thinking that he's the cause of them going away, and all the considerations are on that. It's all on Dharma, but the problem is it's not on transcendence. So that's the problem. You know, it's just like that. You know, what did we do wrong, or this or that? The whole point is that even if you did everything right, which he did, it still doesn't work out. Right? It works out better. In other words, you get the best of the bad bargain. Right? Instead of the worst of the bad bargain. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. So he's bringing out this aspect. So the point is that the body, he's pointing out the bodies and everything, this is just going on by the modes of nature. And the souls are only situated in their particular positions according to their material desire. Otherwise it wouldn't be there. It's not by spiritual desire that one is here. You know, it's by material. Therefore, does that make sense? So, because of that, then we suffer. But the bodies aren't doing things, giving shelter, this and that. It's the bodies. The bodies are the ones. Because it mentions here, it doesn't say the soul. It says those who are devoid of hands are prey for those who have hands. So you're talking about, he's looking, just switching it to the conditioning. The conditionings are just going on here. Because that's been that run that's been coming. Is that reconditioning the conditioning that is favorable for devotional service, but even that, it's still conditioning. It's still not worthwhile, because in the beginning, Prabhupada mentioned good conditioning along with bad conditioning and said all this has a weakness, and it has to be based on pure devotion, which Yudhishthira hasn't been making. His lamentation hasn't been based on Krishna consciousness. Though we understand it's because he's a devotee, he has that Karuna Ras and this, so we can't explain it that way. But the point is that one has to have this other proper understanding, then you know it's the Karuna Ras. Does that make sense? So Narad Muni's explaining it this way means there's some weakness. Because we're talking about pure devotional service. Nard Muni is the authority. So, you know, he's even pointing it out to Vyasadeva. So, you know, it happens. We always have to, you know, be very, very careful exactly how we're viewing things. Does that make sense? In other words, the sages have seen how to engage the conditioning, because the living entity is conditioned by it in the Lord's service. So they've given all these different various methods. And in doing so, then... just thinking about how you get distracted. Mm-hmm. We got distracted, and then just the process is that it's when you're very young, up to puberty, the prominence in the body is kapha or mucus. Mm-hmm. So that's what makes for the smoothness, softness, roundness, you know, just, you know, general pleasant mode of ignoranceness.
Yeah.
Like that. And there's a touch of air is there that creates the, you know, constant movement and running around and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Then when one hits puberty until, you know, one gets old, then the prominence is pitta. But the kapha remains, but the promise comes up until you're, I think, 35. At 35, then the kapha starts to reduce. Right? And that's why everything in the body sags, because the kapha keeps it in place, right? Yeah. Like that. You know, it's like, so if someone's really fit, you can say, wow, great mucus, you know. So, yeah, and then at, like that, at like whatever it is, 50, like that, then vata starts to become prominent. So then the contemplation is very, very good. But then the problem comes because it doesn't have that balance of the pitta. Then you can just keep going. Because, you know, the pitta will keep it on one track. But then it, otherwise it just goes off. You catch something and just take the thread. And,
yes.
And everybody wonders what happened. And what's he talking about? Yeah. Just watching that happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
So material allocation and spiritual allocation.
Yeah, but there was something behind that. It's a vision that he's trying to give here of how to actually see, right, this transcendental vision, where you just see, because the world is created by Brahman, so it's a Brahman understanding that you see how the world works. But the point is that world is created from Brahman because of the desire of the personality of Godhead and because of us as individual personalities. So ultimately, the whole reason behind it is the personal, like that. So we're trying to get to that, but to do that, you have to give up the material attachment to the material so-called personal, which is only the body. It's not actually the soul. And then that's going by the conditioning that's controlled by this kala, karma, and the three gunas. And so it itself is controlled by that, so it itself can't give shelter. The only thing that can give shelter are these kala, karma, and gunas. And those, they're under the control of Maya, and she's under the control of Krishna. So actually only Krishna can give shelter. But that's the whole point of Bhagavatam. So if you're taking shelter of Krishna, then there's some meaning to these relationships. Because then the conditioning becomes a medium for expression, rather than it is who's doing the expression. Does that make sense? So that's what we're trying to get at. Yeah. Nara continues. So in doing that, it makes it more stark here that what living entity is that, that's what's going on, just the material bodies are doing. You're thinking you're giving shelter, but it's just bodies eating bodies.
When you put it that way.
The living dead.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So it kind of breaks down. It starts to break down the attachments when you start to view it in this way. But at the same time, it's because of the personal, it doesn't make it dry. That's why the other side is there. So just to understand that, that's still not enough. Okay, you switch from pious karma into pious gyan. But the point is it's until that devotion to the Lord and seeing it there. That's why it always has to keep going till it meets the Lord. If you just take it up one step, it's not enough.
Yes.
You know? You know, why should we be moral? Well, everybody knows that's good. Well, why should we, you know, why is there, you know, just like that? Well, it's just, you know, it's just, you know, we have to be here. It makes things work. Or this is not enough. But many will just take it. Okay, you've given a reason. Okay, that's fine. So he says, it's not enough. It has to go back to the Lord. That the Lord gave the laws. So actually the laws you should be following are God's laws, not just man-made laws. Because the man-made are in pursuance of God's laws, but due to imperfection and ignorance, then they don't come up to the standard. So much easier to just follow God's laws. But you have to be conditioned to those. Because now being conditioned to passion and ignorance, it's hard to follow God's laws, which require conditioning of goodness.
Yes.
Does that make sense? But by devotional service, that can be done. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, you operate under goodness. Doesn't mean that the body, the conditional modes change. It's just that your operation of it, your view of it, your... Yes?
If one can't come to the platform of goodness, like so he can follow God's laws, then he can at least come to the point where he doesn't harass those...
Who do, yes.
Neutral, kind of.
Yes. Yes.
And then according to Narada's instructions, we should view our relatives as devotees of Krishna first and at his shelter?
Yes. And then we are assisting Krishna in his giving shelter of these devotees. Right? So then, you know, someone has a duty to, you know, make the money, someone has a duty to take care of the food, someone has to do it like this. And so these are the natural services, so then it becomes a service. So one's doing of the duty, one sees it in relationship to the Lord. So that would be nice. Right? But it's not that we can give protection. Because the point is our body is under the control of the most, their body is under the control of the most. So what's the connection? The connection has to go back. So who controls the modes, and who controls that is Krishna. So in other words, if we see it by that, we make our endeavor, but it's still up to Krishna, the result. You know? But we keep trying because it's our service. You know, even if it fails, we don't say, well, what can I do? It's the modes of nature, you know. You know, say, hey, where's the money? The modes of nature. I'm not in control here. Hey, where's the money? Well, I'm not in control. I don't know where dinner is. You have to talk to the modes.
It's perfect.
I follow it completely, and you know everything stays in place. You know, and the fun part is the natural relationships stay in place also. You know, but just on a higher platform, right? You understand? You still get the same interactions, but just whether it's on, you know, the Vedanta platform, the, you know, mode of goodness, whether it's like that, you know, so. That's why there's no problem in it. And you see, it keeps on going till it gets up to the transcendental platform. It's still, the mechanics are the same. That's what we're saying. It's just at what level you want to operate them. But we have this idea: is no, I'll change the mechanics. No, you can't change the mechanics because those are already controlled. Mm.
Yes.
So that's the nice thing. But that's the way you approach it. That's what, because we've been discussing it from here and taking it back. But as Prabhupada pointed out here, that is the last instruction until he surrenders unto the Lord by reviving his original state of eternal servitorship. Right? So that's the point. You start with the Lord and then come down. That's the easiest. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that's that song. He's talking about, this house is yours. He's talking to Krishna. And I'm just a dog that, you know, sits by the moat and makes sure that nothing goes wrong. So that's it. We're Krishna's dog taking care of his house.
I in March, this way we have a big dog, no? Like a dog.
Yeah,
dog.
Call it Christmas dog, right? But, yeah, but that way. Yeah. Does that make sense? So we set the difference. So one is going up, and the other one's starting there and bringing it down. That's the easiest. Because the other one takes more intellectual work. The other one is because you've started with the personal aspect, then engaging the intellect in that is much easier, because the mind has to engage the intelligence. So unless you really like the gyan, it's hard to do the up one. You know, it's easy to do the down one. So even as points, it's easier to do the more difficult one.
Yeah. Although it appears opposite.
Yes, it appears opposite. That's because of ignorance. Like that. You had something? No. No, okay. Narada continued. Therefore, you should turn your undiverted attention towards the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. He has already completed his mission on behalf of the demigods by removing the burden of the earth. As long as the Lord is present here, you should carry on with your duties. But after his disappearance, you should also be prepared to leave this mortal world. Right? So one way says, okay, well, he shifted the topic, but he didn't shift the topic. The point is he's lamenting why I'm doing this. He's already started that before. Right? And so that was corrected by Bhishma Day, by Krishna's arrangement. Right? And so this is coming up again, but his point is that you should do your duties as long as the Lord's here, because it's about the Lord, and you've come here as part of the Lord's pastimes. So you perform your duties. So he came to do these, but now he has completed his mission on behalf of the demigods to remove the burdens of the earth. And so that was done through Dhritarashtra and his sons. So they've finished their part. So now that they go, what's your problem? You know, but you continue your service as long as the Lord is present, because you're part of the Lord's entourage. Understand? So it's still on the same topic. 48 to 50. In verse 49, Narad plainly states what that mission was that Sri Krishna carried out on behalf of the demigods. He appeared in this world as the Kalarupa, the force, the form of all-devouring time. His purpose was to eliminate those who defy his supreme will. Regarding the Lord's return to the spiritual world upon the completion of his mission, in his purport to verse 50, Srila Prabhupada states, Narada, like Vidura, did not disclose the imminent annihilation of the Yadu dynasty, but indirectly gave a hint to the king and his brothers to wait until the incident happened and the Lord departed. Because if you say, wait until the Lord departs, it's like in your mind, because of, one is their affection, but in the material world, because of the Vaikuntha Brahma, we think it's never going to happen. Yes. You know, it's like you say, yeah, you do this, and the young kid, yeah, when I get old, I'll do that. You know, it's like, you know, yeah, you're supposed to do that when you get old, like that, but then one day old comes, and then it's today. It's kind of like, well, no, but that's supposed to be like 50 years away from now. You know, it's like, you know. So that's the thing. You know, you say, okay, but he hinted at it. Like that. Vidura just dealt with it as a general discussion. Just asking, you know, how are the Yadus doing? You know, they've gone back to wherever they're from. They're doing fine, right? You know. But he doesn't get into the philosophical. Like that. In short, the disappearance of Dhritarashtra and Gandhari are but an overture to the departure of the Pandavas once Lord Krishna's rectification of Dharmasri Glani is complete. Verses 51 to 60. Narad Muni reveals that Dhritarashtra will meet a glorious death. Right? So we can see that from here in this, the Mahabharata and you know, in these pastimes, that already note of separation, you can start to hear it in the background. Yes. But it's not the prominence yet. But it's starting today. So you get a different flavor. You start to get this slight flavor of emptiness at the same time as that personal aspect is still going on. Okay. Before Narada departs, he explains that Dhritarashtra, after going to the Ganges, will voluntarily give up his body through the performance of mystic yoga. Having dispelled his lamentation, Narada now discloses the actual facts to the inquisitive Yudhishthira in 6 verses. Narada said, Dhritarashtra, Gandhari and Vidura have gone to Sapta Shrota on the southern side of the Himalayas, where the Ganga had been divided into seven parts by the satisfaction of the Saptarishis. And the banks of the river, Dhritarashtra is now beginning the practice of Astanga Yoga by bathing three times daily, performing Agnihotra sacrifices, and maintaining his life on water alone. Right? So these are all different vratas, that's why they're mentioned here. Right? So the maintaining his bathing properly, so he's maintaining that, he's doing yoga, he's doing Agnihotra sacrifices, and he's maintaining his life on water. So as we discussed the other day about Vanaprastha, it's about what vratas you're performing, it's not about your position, because there may be any combination. You hear of others doing Astanga Yoga in the Bhagavatam, not doing Agnihotras, right? Like that, or living off of just air, or, you know, does that make sense? Like that, yeah.
So it's individual.
It's individual. So the Vanaprastha, because basically, is Grihastha life, though it has generic principles, it's individual, your involvement in it. In other words, the brahmachari, it's pretty simple. There's not a whole lot of variation between one brahmachari and the next.
Yes.
What elements of the modes of nature, material attachment, they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. It's very minor. You can still see the same elements that are there in the Grihastha ashram, and it's very minor. Someone has a little nicer bag, someone doesn't care about their bag. Someone has a nicer chutter, others don't care about their chutter. Someone has a nicer dhoti, or the color's better, or, you know, they tie their sika nicely. Or, you know what I'm saying? You can see elements. But it's very minor, like this. But in the Grihastha, one has spent, 30 years cultivating those things. So now it's going to be very individual. What is the particular kinds of conditioning that is a vanaprastha you're trying to bring in and connect nicely, right? So that's why it's just a group of vratas to perform rather than stages. Because how would you define it? You know, it's just like in Grihastha life. You're not giving stages. Because everybody has different kinds of conditioning. What aspect is it that distracts them?
Yes.
Is that makes sense? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. In this way, Dhritarashtra will realize his qualitative oneness with the Lord and thus become impervious to all material influences. Because that's been his problem. He's not been seeing in that way. Most likely on the fifth day from today, Dhritarashtra will quit his body by burning it to ashes in a fire created from his mystic power. Right? So not to do that in 5 days means he has to be very qualified, very focused. Otherwise, how do you emperor the world unless you're very focused? You know, it's like if you emperor the world when India got independence, there were over 900 kingdoms in India. Like that. And that's just here. And they had already given up, Bangladesh, Burma, Pakistan, all these different kinds of sides. So they weren't counted within what we call India. Does that make sense? So how many would be? So you find it thousands. And so if you're the emperor of that, that means thousands of, well, maybe a couple of them are, more favorable, but that means thousands of them wouldn't mind being in your position. So that means you have to be very knowledgeable, very qualified to keep yourself in that position. Right? And because, as we mentioned before, right?
The weak.
Right? The weak are the subsistence of the strong. Right? Yeah. So he had to be very qualified, and then he left, and in five days, he's basically come to that platform. You know, we see Yayati, it took him 6 months. But he only got to the heavenly planets. While Dhritarashtra is going to merge into Brahman.
He's doing it blind, on a vegan diet as well.
Yeah, true. So we think we should bring these out a bit or something.
Passive.
Yeah, but you also have the part of taking three times a day bath.
Yes.
That may be a bit fanatic, right? Okay. When the chaste Gandhari sees her husband burning along with his thatched cottage, she will enter into the fire with rapt attention. After witnessing this, Vidura will leave that place, overcome by mixed feelings of delight and grief. Footnote 37. She Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on verses 57 to 59 as follows. Since Yudhishthira may try to bring Dhritarashtra back, Narada says, do not be an obstacle. Antarayaha. Yudhishthira may still want to see him. Therefore, Narada says, 5 days from now, he will give up his body. Yudhishthira may want to go burn the body. Narada says that he will burn himself up.
Don't worry.
It's taken care of. I will go and bring back Gandhari. No, that is not possible. When the body of her husband burns along with a hut by the fire of yoga and the household fire, right? Because he says he's doing the household fire, so that will all combine, right? Because he'll do the yajna, then he'll sit for meditation. She, situated outside, will enter the fire following her husband. I will go bring Vidura back. No, that is not possible. Seeing this astonishing event, he will depart for holy places. It should be understood that Dhritarashtra, being an offender to devotees, attained only liberation, not prema, since Vidura did not give such mercy. Because he wasn't qualified. He just, we could see is that if he had functioned on this understanding of Brahman from the beginning, then by that association of so many pure devotees, and having the personal association of Krishna, then he would come to that platform of prema. Yes. You know, or at least get to Vaikuntha or something, right? Yes.
What about Gandhari? Was she also offensive, or
That it doesn't mention exactly, but you know. She would automatically get that if that's what it is, but if she's devotional, then she would go beyond that. But you never really hear. She's known for being a chaste woman, not for being a devotee.
Yes.
Like that. Draupadi, she's known for being a devotee. Like that. So you have those elements. That's the whole point, is that just bringing the conditioning to a better state is still not enough. The soul has to have the proper consciousness. Yes.
Why mixed feelings with Vidura? Delight and sorrow?
It means delight that, you know, he actually followed and he attained perfection. But, you know, it'd be grief that, you know, here is the person that he's, you know, been associating with and interacting with, you know, his whole life, so they're not there. At the same time, you'd have the element of, you know, that you could bring him to the platform of prema. But he didn't have the qualification. But now, in that purified state, when he comes back, then he'll be able to move forward. He's had that association, so those elements of Gyata Sukriti may be there. You know, unless there's the offense to the devotees has been such that it's been like a mad elephant. But here we see by Yudhishthira in that there's that forgiveness. You know, being sane, that may be another thing. You know, you may get to neutral, but like that.
Marge?
Yeah.
It was mentioned of the household fire.
The household fire.
Is that the fire that you get at the marriage? You
take the marriage ceremony, that was just maintained. So then when you go to the forest, you take that with you.
How do you do that?
You take it in a pot.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the first question is, how did you maintain it?
Yeah.
No, it's just you always cover it with ash, it'll stay. Like that. You know, if you have dry, if the wood is dry and the cow dung's dry, it will maintain. You know, cover it with enough ash that it doesn't breathe, then it'll maintain. And the more you open it to, like when the temple yakshala is there, that'll be kept that way. Like that. It was kept like that before.
15 years non-stop.
Yeah, but then when we had to bring it to the school, then at that time it's been. So it's just every day it's installed here. But in the temple, it will be more. Mm-hmm. In his purport to verse 39, Srila Prabhupada explains that Vidura was delighted that his unfortunate brother Dhritarashtra attained liberation in impersonal Brahman. His grief was due to the following. He was sorry that he could not make his brother turn into a pure devotee. This was not done by Vidura, because of Dhritarashtra's being inimical to the Pandavas, who are all devotees of the Lord. An offense at the feet of the Vaishnava is more dangerous than an offense at the lotus feet of the Lord. Vidura was certainly very liberal to bestow mercy upon his brother, Dhritarashtra, whose past life was very materialistic. But ultimately, the result of such mercy certainly depended on the will of the Supreme Lord in the present life. Therefore, Dhritarashtra attained liberation only. And after many such liberated states of life, one can attain to the stage of devotional service. Vidura was certainly very mortified by the death of his brother and sister-in-law, and the only remedy to mitigate such lamentation was to go out to pilgrimage. Like it's with there's movement. Water by movement stays pure. Air by movement is peaceful. Like that. So like that, then it deals like that.
So movement is good for the mind?
Movement is good for mind, like that. The mind likes that. Like that, because the vata is the goodness. That's why sometimes walking when you chant, the mind stays a little more peaceful. That's with those with more vata. It's those with not, then they prefer to sit and chant. So it's not. So those who sit will always say those who walk. It's not good because your mind will be distracted. No, their mind will be distracted. But the other ones, their mind becomes peaceful by sitting. It may not be. It's just the nature of what conditioning you have. So it doesn't matter. If you can sit, that's always good, because then you don't have to worry about bumping into people and someone walking into your place and all these different things. No?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's there. But it's not that you can't concentrate there. It's actually easier to concentrate if there's more vata. Is that so? Yeah.
So you have to be careful of walking into another's territory?
Yes. Yes, of course. That's the point. Okay. Okay. So here it says in his previous life it was materialistic. So we can either take it as material means previous to this particular life as Dhritarashtra. And so in this life he's at least moved up to liberation. And then a few lifetimes of that, then he can come to the platform of devotional service. Or you can take it previous life meant as a Grihastha, living in Hastin, as doing the duties of a king, and now talking about in this present life, meaning these, 5 days of Vanaprastha. Because that's generally when you're dealing with the renounced life, you talk about it before, as previous, like that. After saying, this is the end, okay. So then we're almost done. We seem to always just get up to this last little bit and then we don't quite get there. But then that means next time we'll go through the chapter very quickly.
Yes. Progress will be made.
Yes.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Janitai Gaura Prema ki.
For me, it's always better to sit, but in winter it's difficult because it's cold, so you have to walk. Then you have to face the new issue.
Yeah, who's got which spot?
Which spot? Which way the traffic flows?
Yeah, like that.
And then there's a new one. Then there's like a maverick prodigy. Yeah. It's like, why we should only be able to walk there? It's like,
and you get in all these headspaces. And so that's why you got to find it out of the way.
Yeah.
One. Then you're doing that, and then others notice that was good. So if they get there before you, then they take it. Then you have to come the next day earlier to get
you just got to go really early. Then people don't mess with you. If you're always there before them, then generally
they leave you alone.
Yeah.
Then they say, okay, after a while it just becomes yours.
Yeah, that's
yeah. This is very simple, yeah.
Thanks. But one thing is that as being Shastra, and being there for a person, when you put it in right side up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're putting the bag upside down. It's like books on the shelf.
Yeah, right side. Of course. Thank you.
So, excuse me. So, so if You said that Prabhu Karma can always change. So if a person is endowed with a certain amount of, like for example, passion and ignorance, then how is
but that,
it that...
We were talking about the passion and ignorance of the consciousness, not of the body.
Yeah. But the body is a reflection of the consciousness.
Yes, but the consciousness is functioning under these modes, so the consciousness can function beyond these modes. It doesn't mean that the body doesn't have those abilities. Those will remain. You know, in other words, let's say one does very active physical service. That will remain, but now instead of being active and physical because of the modes of nature, one will engage that activeness in the Lord's service.
And that makes
pure consciousness. Okay. Yes. It means the conditioning won't change. You're just, all you're doing is reconditioning that. You're applying that conditioning according to the Shastra instead of not. But the consciousness, you're trying to get your consciousness then to the step beyond that, where it's about devotion to the Lord.
So that's the aspect that makes it goodness, is that it's connected to the Lord.
Yes, because in other words, the action is done in goodness. But the body is going to be, it's going to function controlled by the modes.
Because I think maybe I have not the correct concept of what goodness really means. Like, I thought it was like peaceful and pleasant.
That's one aspect that comes because if you're following the laws of God, you're peaceful and pleasant. Like, let's say you have a standard citizen, and they're, you know, in a certain place. You know, if it's a normal place, let's say it's a mall or something, they're peaceful. Now you have a criminal, they're in the mall, they're not peaceful. Why? Because one's following the laws of the state, one's not. So if you follow the laws of God, you're peaceful.
Yeah. But they might still internally feel like agitated, but they're forcing themselves to...
It's not a matter of forcing yourself, as you engage your whatever position you're in, to whatever degree you can. You know? So in other words, you have two aspects, the reconditioning of the body to following the law of God's laws, and bringing the consciousness of the soul from the conditioned state to the natural, constitutional state. You understand? So two aspects are going on. The body's engaged in the proper activities, but the consciousness, you're trying to bring it to the platform of devotion. Both are going on at once.
So maybe I'm confusing goodness and pure goodness.
Yes, basically. Pure goodness means it's about pleasing Krishna. Goodness is about just following God's laws perfectly. Because goodness doesn't really like disturbance on the material platform. But pure goodness means disturbance doesn't bother it because it's for the Lord.
Okay. So if we're going from a level of passion and ignorance, do we have to rise to goodness and then to pure goodness, or can we go to pure goodness?
You're doing them both at once. You're, by consciousness, trying to elevate yourself to pure goodness by keeping your situations in goodness. In other words, the mind and the body are kept in goodness, but your consciousness is pure goodness. Because the body is always going to be controlled by the modes of nature.
So in order to get there, we have to create a situation in which we can get to that.
That the situation helps. It's done by consciousness. Situations don't... The same situation, one person is a pure devotee and the other person is a total demon. It's not... The situations only help.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Let's say someone's a bad cook. If I put him in a 5-star hotel kitchen, is he going to be a better cook? No. So that's the thing. And if I take the cook from that 5-star hotel and put him in, you know, somebody's not very well arranged kitchen, it doesn't drop his cooking standard.
But he's got more to work with.
All it is it makes more to work with that, you know, if you know what to do with it, that's all. So that's why there's two things going on at once. You're baking a better situation for the body and mind to function in. But the real point, the cultivation, is the soul's consciousness of the Lord.
So as long as you have that point in the forefront...
If that's in the forefront, even if the other one isn't going so well, that's why sometimes you see in the earlier days, the devotees weren't very expert at these cultural elements.
But they were very developed in about the consciousness of the soul and being done for Krishna. So even though it was a bit rough and ready, it went very nicely devotionally. And nowadays devotees are a little bit more sophisticated, but that forefront of pure devotional service isn't the drive, you know, necessarily. Individuals, yes.
You know, so are you saying that it might also hinder that having a good situation, it might take the focus away from...
No, if you focus on creating a good situation, that'll take it away. Having a good situation is fine. You, in other words, you make the endeavor only because the situation is helpful in the consciousness. If you think the situation is going to create the consciousness, that's not the proper full understanding.
Okay.
You understand? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not about the situation. It's about being Krishna conscious. Now, if a particular situation will help that, then accept that situation.
Okay.
You know. So as long as that situation works, then you do that.
Okay.
You know. But it's not about the situation. That's what the materialists are doing. They're just dealing with situations, right? Because the body is a situation, right? So that's all they're dealing with.